Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 421. It is a Friday that we're releasing this, October 11th. In 2 days, Walking and Talking Dead are coming back on the air. So tune in. AMC, 9 and 10 o'clock. We're on right after Walking Dead. I've seen the premiere episode. It's really fucking great.
Can't wait. The trailers look amazing.
Scott Gimple is awesome.
He's the new guy in town.
He's the new guy.
He's that new kid on the block.
He's doing a fantastic job. And apparently episodes 2 and 3, like, the show just starts one level here. I'll just call that here, and then just fucking jumps.
That's great.
Like, each, it just gets crazier and crazier. So
I think we're gonna see an upswing in, like, really good storytelling on TV post Breaking Bad. Of, like, how to escalate things
kind
at
of,
a constant.
Kind of raise TV's game.
Yeah, and they have for the past few years, but I think especially after this last run of episodes, everyone's going to be like, we can just really go for it.
Yes.
I think we're going to see a change.
Yes. Yeah. I think you should push your glasses up at the end of it.
I think we're going to see a change in modern television.
Jonah's doing a face that you can't see at the moment. Jonah's doing a lot of faces that you can see because he's performing at the San Francisco Punchline October 10th, 11th, and... No, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yes, 10th,
October 10th,
11th,
and 12th.
At the San Francisco Punchline.
Punchline's a great venue. It's down
I
on
love
Battery
it
Street.
Yeah,
in the financial district, and it's one of my favorite clubs in the country.
Yeah, yeah. And during the day, I'll be hanging out on Turk Street if you want to, you know, do some heroin. it's a real bad area, that Turk Street.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a news article I saw last time I was in San Francisco where it says, police throw in the towel of zero block of Turk.
So they just drive up to the edge and they're like, bah,
yeah.
Fine.
No, thank you.
you guys got it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'll be there with Nick Youssef, who is a great comedian, an old friend of mine, and I'll be having limited edition posters designed by Garrett Ross and screened by Dave Clock.
And if you want, Jonah Ray will do his entire set as Bruce Gutter.
Drinking vodka is the best. It's like water from an alien planet.
That 35 minutes, I thought this would be entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just watching a guy on stage.
Yeah. TJ Maxx so much cooler than Ross. Lars Ulrich one time. I remember a party in Hollywood, California.
Oh my God, it totally changes the tone of the story when Bruce Gutter is at that party.
I know, right? It makes more sense.
Yeah, when Bruce Gutter's playing Truth or Dare with Courtney Love.
And I said truth because I always do.
Hey, Bruce, where's the cocaine?
Buddy, I'm in the middle of a story.
Bruce! No, I'm doing Courtney Love.
No, I was. Yeah.
Oh wait, did you break character thinking that? I broke character. Well, that
yes, I think we just well.
This is why we're stand-ups and not sketch people. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by the Enemy series from Hyperion. It's us versus zombies and Charlie Hickson's The Enemy series. So maybe you might want a little zombie fix and you're all caught up on The Walking Dead comics, which I am. So this is The Enemy series. We'll catch you up. They're super fast-paced. They're tales of zombie survival. And there's a lot of sacrifice.
Oh, I thought you were going to say sex.
There might be a lot of sex in it.
True.
It's super fast-paced, though. And then you'd slow down during those parts. And then get fast-paced again. Zombies. Sex.
Oh, man, you're not good at rhythm, are you?
No. Fast. Oh, okay. Oh, shit. Fast. Oh, shit. Wait. Talking about reading.
Baseball.
That's how I read. It's fun for your girlfriend when she feels like you're always about to get into an accident. Anyway, the Enemy series.
I stopped short with Deanna during sex all the time.
Stop short! Yay, the Enemy series from Hyperion. Available now wherever books and ebooks are sold. Also, speaking of books, our guest on this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Nick Offerman, whom we adore.
Nick is the most interesting person you could ever have a conversation
with.
He's
a man.
He is a man. It's not even that he tries to be a man. He just has a really great outlook on life and a fantastic way of expressing that.
Yeah. Loves his wife, loves his work, loves his friends. Like,
just, you know, likes just being happy.
Yeah.
Totally kills the myth that you have to, you know, be unhappy to be a successful artist.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. And Nick has a book called Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living. Which is available now.
It's great, with artwork by Mike Mitchell, a great artist.
Oh yeah, I know Mike.
Mitchell. So he does all the artwork for that.
That's great. So pick up Nick's book, and right now listen to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 421 with Nick Offerman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
the Nerdist Podcast. Nick Offerman returns.
I didn't know neither Jonah nor I were there. I knew I wasn't there.
We recorded it in Santa Monica because of scheduling. There was something going on that day where I think you were working in Santa Monica or something.
I don't know.
And so we...
Were we in production for the Nerdist TV show?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Doesn't explain me.
No, we could have been shooting a sketch.
So my experience...
How was it with Jess Chris?
It was wonderful. I didn't know he'd failed to mention
that he normally has.
What are you talking about? Well, we talked about these guys all the time. Yeah,
that there was any supplemental.
Yeah, Nick, I don't know if you can see that painting that's right behind his head, but it's not just Chris.
I feel like, you know, Nick's not remembering you guys. I think most of the time we were talking about, you know, Nick would say something funny and charming, and I'd be like, boy, I wish Matt and Jonah were here to hear this because
he did say that a lot.
A lot.
I feel like he might never have said that ever.
I'm guessing he said that while I was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I described the Nick Offerman perfume. If he were to make a cologne or perfume, it would just smell like sawdust and brute. That's what I think of when I think of you, Nick Offerman.
I'll take that as a compliment.
It's a huge compliment. Both of those things are delicious smelling. You don't want to eat them, but
if I come out with a line of fragrance, my first scent will be Manchester.
Manchester hair?
Done. No, Manchester. No, Manchester.
Okay. Will it smell like Chester?
I'm not sure yet. We'll see.
Sawdust and brute. You can have it.
But I will eschew puns in naming my scents.
I'm fine with that. I love it, actually.
As much as possible.
Just straight up like Grit by Nick Offerman.
It's like that hard, that's like that grainy soap you use.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually got grit
in gas station bathrooms?
Yeah, yeah.
Like where
you got to get the oil off.
With the powder?
It's called lava, gentlemen. It's called lava soap. And the grit is called pumice.
We've never been near any kind of workshop.
I just never knew.
And then you've got the Gojo waterless hand cleaner, which is also quite effective.
Why was it called lava if it wasn't lava?
Well, it's pretty thick. I'm guessing that's why they call it that.
Because it's badass.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because it cleans the soil from your hands as though scorching hot lava.
It will burn a trail of... Yeah, it will leave your blackened hands...
It does a number on Wilshire Boulevard.
It will leave a trail of death.
I just referenced the movie Volcano.
And it's you sure did.
Yeah,
I let it pass.
That all happens on Wilshire Boulevard.
Slide away.
Yeah.
Well, the bit was sort of like the volcano. It was slow, but we couldn't avoid it. There was no getting around it.
Let's get analogous.
You know what? It does feel weird with us here. You guys talk.
I want to thank Nick Offerman for... And I Instagrammed it because I thought it was so great. Your inscription to me in your book, Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for a Delicious Living. Chris, wood, meat, freedom. Let's rap. Heart, Nick.
That's right. The heart stands for love.
What?
Yeah.
I don't recognize this symbol. I don't know what that means. I know what wooden meat and freedom are.
And the heart, it insinuates affection.
I didn't really...
The heart's made of three pieces.
That's good.
Wood, meat, and freedom.
Did the book come out? Has the book come out yet?
No, October 1st, which is next week or so.
It is indeed next week.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. I'm growing.
Now you're gonna be on the best. You're gonna be on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm already telling you. I've seen the pre-orders.
That's a weird thing. It's my first book, so
yeah. I'm letting you know. How do you feel about that?
Strange.
Good.
It's very different to hand someone a written document, and it, you know, the thickest term paper I'd written. You know, for agriculture class was maybe 12 pages on mulch.
You wrote it on mulch. That's tough.
Well, not just mulch, silt, loam.
The basics.
Yeah. It was called fecundity.
What was your grade on this paper?
It's a paper I wrote in my dreams, so my grade was a straight A.
No. I wrote straight A on it.
Yeah. You know what's really funny is it, you know, the Dos Equis guy, the most interesting man in the world character, they've engineered this guy, this fake guy.
Yeah.
What?
With all these things.
No.
Yeah, it's okay, Jonah. It's really you're the soul of that guy.
Well, I try not to take umbrage when I hear this sort of thin tapestry they're trying to weave in that ad campaign. But I do like to think the Dos Equis guy maybe would shine my shoes, or I'd drop my car off for him to detail.
And he does a thorough job.
Yeah, he does a fine job.
Yeah, he's good.
It makes him so interesting.
And he looks in my rearview mirror and mutters things to himself like, someday you will drive a car like this. If you can step up into a more delicious cerveza.
If only.
You too, someday.
Dos Equis, if only. Dos Equis is a perfectly delicious beer, but there are others.
I'm surprised. Have you been approached by products, or like, we want you to represent our thing?
Sure. Some, yeah. I mean, there's been a disappointment in the amount of tool companies. I'm waiting for a big hammer campaign.
Right. Stanley.
I'm holding out, in fact. Estwing.
Nice.
I'm going straight to the top. But some do. But it's funny. I think that advertising executives probably look at things like Nielsen ratings, sure. And so their kid's like, "Hey, get this guy on this show to sell your axe. I mean, or just to sell your chainsaw or your tractor." And they say, "Sounds good. Let me look on the chart." Oh, no. No one knows who this guy is.
Well, they don't understand cultural penetration, as opposed to, they're just looking at a Nielsen number.
You're correct.
Which is not really an accurate representation of how well-known you might be.
That's true, but what is an accurate representation, I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. We were just having Adam Scott was just on an hour ago. And it totally happened. I swear to God.
He's very handsome.
He is unstoppably handsome. Unstoppably handsome.
Good hair.
And yeah, we talked about
it. Yeah, we did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah, we definitely talked about it. But we were kind of walking through what it must have been like to be on a hit show in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Where it was, you know. Or even going back to the 50s where it was like, no, 40 million people watched the same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty – even in my household, when Will and Grace was king in the early part of the 2000s or the aughts.
Mm-hmm. The aughts.
What are smart people calling it?
The aughts.
The aughts.
Yeah, early 2000s.
They're like, honey, they just gave me a Porsche because we're doing so well.
Yeah, it's – I mean, the difference just between – and same exact – thing Thursday night on NBC. times have changed. I mean, even Rob Lowe was going off about it in a humorous way, from the Porsches of Will and Grace to when the West Wing got picked up, when it looked like it was going to stick around, they received an espresso machine. And I think it was an NBC executive who came in and was like, "All right, everybody, congratulations. I'm glad to tell you, like, you know, you're getting another 13 episodes. Welcome to an espresso machine." and everyone was like, "Well, that's pretty lame, but it's not bad." And then they realized it was one espresso machine.
It wasn't each person
in the green room. And then they were irked.
Yeah. You got to get your own Keurig cup, though.
So they didn't have to share a Porsche, right? They just got to.
No, each of the four cast members received a Porsche Boxster. Which,
that's true.
When I was told this story, I had never known someone that had owned a car of that brand. And so I think it was an old agent of Megan's told me the story and then kind of scoffed. And I said, "Well, why are you scoffing?" And she said, "Well, it was a Boxster."
Jesus.
And I had to have it explained to me that that was
it's the entry model.
It's the poor man's Porsche. And I was like, "Well, you're talking to the wrong audience, because to me that's an impressive automobile."
Yeah. Yeah.
That's way more kick-ass than a Taurus.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's still a free car.
Yeah.
It's still an expensive free car.
True. Even if it was a brand new Taurus, I still would have been absolutely floored.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's only the $60,000 model. Like, it's still a nice car.
It's a nice day at the scratch-offs.
Who decided that, though? Like, who's like, let's give them Porsches, and then someone has to decide which model, pick up the colors, and then deliver them to the studio?
It's a very good question.
Very curious. So things are different now in NBC?
Presumably. I don't hear from them.
Yeah, when Parks and Rec... They received Starbucks gift cards in the mail.
Is it ever weird? You run into the executive and you're like, and the executive's like, "Hey, what are you doing these days?" Like, oh, I'm doing.
For a while we kept changing executives a couple times a season. So and then they would have a shindig at their house, like, welcome all the new shows. And I kept having to over and over again say, I'd say, "Hey, hi, thanks for having us," and they'd look at me and I'd say, "Nick Offerman, I'm on Amy's show," and they would get a look and be like, "Nah," they couldn't tell if I.
Amy.
They were like, "Oh, so there's somebody between Chris Pratt and Jim O'Hare." But you know, it's we're of course very grateful that we're still on on the air. I mean, it's insane.
It's remarkable
that we've survived. Having said that, I will mention that I think last year NBC sent us each 3 copies of the box DVD, and this year I received 1. And I took note. I was like, okay, that's fine. 1's all I need.
It's 2 less you can sell to Amoeba.
It's true. But
espresso machine.
No, it's not.
when you get the 1 DVD in the mail, do you turn to Megan and go, "That's right, honey, Thursday nights, I'll take it from here"?
I don't.
But I think, just because, look, again, Nielsen ratings, not an accurate representation. I think a lot of people know the show. People just don't watch television in the way that television still tries to rate television.
Aren't they going to start to try, though? Are they doing digital Nielsen ratings now?
They are trying, but there really should be a 3-dimensional model that measures cultural penetration. Like, where are people watching this online? It should count DVRs. It should count clips that they're watching on Hulu. It should,
hashtags.
It should count, like, there should be, well, it should count, you know, like, people should look at your sort of social media presence, you know, like, what are people known? How well are they known? And then that should all factor in.
It should, and I think it will. I mean, I think it's an antiquated system, and the problem is that even if they can begin to keep track of who's watching when and where, then they have the further Herculean task of monetizing that information.
Yes.
And I think the networks and the sort of dinosaur system that's in place is scared shitless about that shift taking place, because right now, at least, even though the money is diminished, the money is still coming in. They're like, "We scored a 7.2. And they're like, "Here's your money."
Right.
Yeah.
And to say, okay, now we have this new system where we scored an X23 2000?
How much is that worth?
Yeah, how many?
Oh, God, that would have been the best car ever. X23 2000, holy shit.
Fuck yeah.
Well, because
it's like the SUX 2000 from RoboCop.
Yes, the SUX. But I always think of it as, like, when I think about, if I were to go to my dad and my dad's family represents sort of like what middle America is aware of. Like what most of, I mean, like what mainstream America is aware of. So if I were to say something like, "Hey, Dad's, what do you think of Flight of the Conchords?" He'd be like, "Nah, I don't know what that is." But I guarantee if I went home and I was like, "Ron Swanson," he'd be like, "Oh, yeah!" Like they know. It's people know. Like, people know.
Your dad sounds awesome.
He's awesome. He is.
A. B. I'd like to agree with you. It's one of those things I can't begin to fathom, you know, what the millions and millions of people in our nation are like. Are there still people who come home from work every night and watch TV from dinner to bedtime?
Sure.
And
they're called elderly people,
I suppose. Or
yeah,
or,
and they
or
turn on CBS.
Republicans, perhaps. I don't know.
I don't know where they are.
I don't.
But most people under 25 are watching their phone or laptop.
It's true, and I'm grateful. I think that just enough of that has sort of oozed through the consciousness over at the company, mm-hmm. that has allowed us to stick around. They're like, "Well, I think some people like this show. Some of the kids do. I don't know, better than those other shows."
I think you'll notice it when your book does really well, because you can't.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. How is this wood?
It's not a good wood.
Looks like a laminate.
He's right.
I think if you can get a lot of people to buy your book, that is a huge thing, because to get people to go out of their way to trade money for something is no easy task.
So if they will do that, then it seems to me that then there is something there.
Well, that's the hope. It's been the whole thing. I mean, just getting the job in the first place has been hilarious and really surreal. And as long as the more good that comes our way because of Parks and Rec, the more it makes us all mind our manners more and say, "Wow, we're insanely lucky. Let's be decent and not turn into ass wipes." And that's I've basically just given away the entire content of the book.
That was it?
Yeah.
That's a kind of a thick book for just that.
Well, there's some pictures that are really funny. They're super
doodles?
Funny.
Did you get any doodles in there?
They're illustrations by this really funny and talented guy named Mike Mitchell.
Oh, I love Mike Mitchell.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
He's well known in our circle, dare I say. Yeah. He's done a bunch of stuff for he did that great great portrait of Conan during the Team Coco. And he's done stuff with Rainn Wilson, and he's done a lot of Parks and Rec stuff. Like he did Leslie Knope as Rosie the Riveter.
He
did our whole show as the Casablanca poster. He's really smart.
Yeah, he's great.
Funny.
He does a lot of stuff for Jensen at Gallery 1988. Yep.
So he did. We had him do a bunch of illustrations in the style of like early Scout manuals / Hardy Boys mysteries.
Oh, perfect.
Of course, yeah.
They're pretty dope.
I collected old Boy Scout manuals when I was a kid.
That's creepy.
Yeah, well, I was a Boy Scout. That's kind of what we did.
Creepy. You're still not going to allow it? Not going to allow it.
Oh, I can make a fire outside.
I think there's a book series for you. Like I feel like I wrote a book once, and then someone said, "Are you going to write another book?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know what else I'm going to talk about." I feel like you have so many things that you could talk about or teach people or cover or...
Well, I hope so. I mean, I feel really lucky that I got the chance to do this one. And I do. The ideas that I have, if somebody said, "Do you want to do another one?" They're more specific. I want to do a book that's my Offerman Woodshop Volume 1.
Yep.
Where each of the players, you know, gets to, like, my dad will do a section on grilling, and My shop manager Lee will show how to make an Offerman Woodshop mustache comb and the kazoo and all that. Maybe some lifestyle, but then I also want to do a much more thick and delicious book about making my first guitar. And I can't decide if it should be a documentary or a book.
Are you looking into luthering? Are you going
to
do it?
I am. I mean, I've got a bunch of wood milled up already to make.
What are you using?
Ukuleles. Well, I've got koa and mango from Hawaii.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of red cedar for tops. I also have a bunch of quilted maple.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying a bunch of different. I have cocobolo for sides and back. Nice.
Koa wood. That's the wood in my ring.
Yeah.
Oh.
Koa is a good. It's a good tone wood. I like East Indian rosewood and a Sitka top. Sitka spruce top.
I do have a bunch of Sitka.
Yeah.
And a bunch of also Alaskan yellow cedar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, are you going to do a hollow body? Are you going to do an acoustic? What are you going to make?
Well, first, I'm going to make a bunch of ukuleles and see how those go.
And scale up.
And then just
expand it.
It only has four strings. I don't get it.
And then I'll probably start with something modest, like a triple aught Martin kind of body style.
Will you call them Uke Offermans?
I don't know what I'll call them.
If you ever make a left-handed one.
Uke Offerman.
Just let me know.
Left-handed
take that off your hands.
Copy that.
Yeah. Just let me know.
That's
a good tip.
I sent you a video, and then I felt bad. Like, oh, people probably send you shit all the time like this. But I sent you a video of a guy who made I don't remember what he was making. I think it might have just been a chair or a table or something. But he made it with all of, like, he made the antique woodworking equipment and then made a table with that. Like, this is what they would have done in the old days. And with the
Do you remember that guy on PBS it was in Williamsburg, Virginia, and he would just have that shop and he just used all the period tools and would make
cabinets. What this guy did.
I can't think of that guy's
I can't remember that
show, but
then there was the New Yankee Workshop, which,
sure,
yeah, yeah. I mean,
well, that's what the incredible part of going to the Gamble House in Pasadena is that it's Green and Green are the ones that built the entire thing. And so it's like, it's a beautiful, huge house, craftsman, but like, it's nuts to think that was before there was any electronic tool. So everything was sanded down by hand. Everything was cut by hand.
Yeah. And back then you had to like rely on lightning to generate enough electricity.
It's true.
To go back in time.
Cause that's the house they use for Doc Brown.
Yeah.
We're actually building a small Japanese garden gazebo called an Azumaya that's inspired. We're stealing some details from the Gamble House.
Oh, nice.
It's one of my favorite things about visiting this. They were contemporaries of Frank Lloyd Wright at the turn of the 20th century, the craftsman movement. And it is incredibly beautiful, the amount of detail and handwork that's apparent not only in the house,
but the furniture. And how it corresponds. The furniture in a room will correspond to, like, the fixtures in the actual room.
Everything is of a piece. Yeah. And the docents, if you go tour this place, will tell you that to do it today would cost like $300 million. Yeah. because they had like over 100 guys in the yard working for like 18 months.
Yeah, it was a Gamble, isn't it? Like Procter & Gamble.
Yeah,
it was a Gamble family summer home. I went to it shortly after because the Huntington Library and Botanical Gardens had a whole green exhibit, which was great. And it was hard because it was like there would be the chair and you want to like, you know, you want to feel the wood and see how smooth they were able to make everything so long ago. But of course, there's someone there.
Filthy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Lord.
I wonder if you were to just research that on Angie's List, how much you'd get it built for.
I don't know.
Angie's List. This podcast is brought to you by Angie's List.
It's not, but you can say that.
Okay, thank you.
I always liked it. Like, I really liked it, the Hearst Castle. And I go, how the fuck? I mean, basically, there was nothing here. And they built a railway just to bring stuff here and then built this insane mega mansion out of nothing.
Yeah, it was what someone did before they thought of Las Vegas.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, we have unlimited wealth. We are Americans, so what should we do? Here's what we do. Where can I get some zoo animals?
When I was a kid, and we would sometimes in the summer, we'd go down to Newport, Rhode Island. Just those houses are just the most insane. And they were everybody's like house they used for 4 weeks.
Have you ever thought about tackling a house?
Sure. I would love to build. My dream house would be like a huge stone and wood craftsman sort of lodge.
Nice.
But the problem is my wife is a superhero of interior design. I'm like a Fred Flintstone, and she's, I don't know, someone who's super tasteful.
Does she like craftsman? Does she like craftsman stuff, or is she more mid-century?
Terribly. No, she really likes modern architectural style. She's an amazing art collector, and so she kind of has. She's kind of the. She has the house covered.
Yeah.
And she can sort of put it all together so much more masterfully and more quickly than I can build one table. That there's not even really a conversation. Right? But maybe I you know, it's sort of a pipe dream that one day I'll build her something in the mountains and take her there, and then I will have her.
Yes, I think you already
finally
have her.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, yeah.
She's made some promises, and
this is going to be on top of a mountain, Chris.
I'm doing some training.
Difficult. Every time you kind of roll over to see if it's okay, it's like, is there a house yet?
Yeah.
Oh, and then you just sort of roll back over defeated. I mean, it's fair. It's fair.
It is.
Do you do commissions, or do you just make stuff that you want to tackle?
No, we do commissions. I mean, I've taken on a few really talented woodworkers who are handling most of the actual work. We're doing a dining table and a desk right now, as well as a sort of modern four-poster bed, all of which are designs that I help with and sign off on, and then they do most of the labor. I just made 12 miniature 20-inch canoe paddles. And when I actually get to make something, then I sign it so that the things that come out of my shop, there's no mistake. If it gets the shop logo branded on it, that means it's made by us. And if it has my signature, then it was made by me.
I really want to commission something.
It's like a Murano glass factory.
I really want to commission something. I have a room in my house that looks like a log cabin, and it's all the original wood from the structure that was on the property of the house.
Oh, nice.
From, you know, almost 100 years ago. And it just needs an Offerman something in that room.
It sounds like one of our specialties is a stool with a cavity in the middle that holds a cauldron. This was a commission. Holds a cauldron beneath the hole. And it's to it was for a woman who's a doctor of a sort of a witch-like persuasion.
We talked about this, she's supposed to squat over the pot.
Yeah, and you put steaming herbs in the cauldron.
Yeah,
and it affects your ladies' reproductive organs.
Right. Yeah, it's steaming
in a helpful manner.
And sperm. You put steaming sperm in there, right. And then it gets her pregnant.
Exactly.
That's old science.
I showed you the schematics.
So they didn't think it would kill the sperm.
Vapor pregnancy.
Yeah, it's a vapor pregnancy. Yeah, yeah.
I'm no biologist, but
the baby comes out looking like Casper.
That's how most ninjas are born.
But Casper was dead Richie Rich. Let's be honest.
It looks beautiful in a California Claro walnut. Tongue oil finish.
Well, if you guys are ever open to, if you ever open a new commissions, I'll commission something. Maybe not the fertility pot, but something. Something would be really nice.
Yeah, we're having a great time. I was kind of a one-man shop, and then I got the job on Parks and Rec, and I said, well, either I lock up my shop and it remains dark until I'm done getting to play the best part ever written for a human, or I find some friends and we start up a little concern. So we have this great little co-op going.
That's awesome.
And it's really cool. Each shop member has one or two items that are very popular at Christmas. One guy makes kazoos, you know, Lee makes the mustache comb. And so it sort of allows, you know, the shop has a life outside of me, allowing people to make a meager, you know, woodworker's living, which I appreciate. I think it feels better than just locking it up and putting my toys away.
Yeah. And it's a place for you to go and hang out too with like-minded guys. And just, you know.
And ladies. Yeah. Interestingly, my two best woodworkers are women, which I'm very proud of.
Yeah. It's the eye for detail.
It's a very feminist.
Deanna, my wife, worked in the wood shop. Like when we went back to Chicago, she had to, like, she stopped by and they're like, hey! It was she's way better at that stuff than me.
Well, I think it's good to, because a lot of times, look, performers can be very short attention spanny, and they get very excited about things in bursts. And I can totally see myself going, woodworking, man, that's where it's at. And then buying all the equipment and stuff. And then it just, like you said, it just sits.
And then making a smaller piece of wood than the one you bought.
And then every once in a while kind of going in and just looking at the equipment and going, yeah, boy, this looks awesome.
By the time.
Yeah, and then another year goes by.
It's true. It's that's human nature. I've certainly gotten excited about hobbies that I didn't follow up on.
Let's list some of them. Golf?
Golf, sure. Yeah, golf. Confectionery.
Oh, yeah?
No.
I was really excited about this.
Nor golf.
Sugar situation.
Golf, I know.
Golf confectionery. He made golf cakes.
Oh?
Yep.
Back on board.
I lost 2 or 3 weeks to two video games in the 90s. One was called Banjo-Kazooie.
Of course! Yeah.
And one was called Earthworm Jim.
Earthworm Jim!
I was staying with a guy, and I had never had my own video game system. And, you know, I was a loser staying on his couch, and he was like, hey, I just got these two new games. Let's check it out. And literally, 3 weeks later, we opened we let the sun in. We're like, what just fucking, what happened? Well, we won. Yeah. And it was such a crazy lesson. We ate 3 pizzas a day and played these games all the way through until we defeated them, which I don't recall what that means exactly.
You lived a dream. 3 pizzas a day?
I did. The most, my favorite thing about it was I learned that I never needed to play a video game for the rest of my
you
life.
You got it. Like, you got it in that couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. That if I hadn't gone through to completion, I wouldn't have gotten the lesson. But by winning the game and then feeling the emptiness immediately thereafter was like, oh, this is nothing.
That never changes, by the way.
No.
I mean, you still get the experience of like, oh, this game's really fun. And, you know, what's so great about video games now is that the stories are much more robust than we were.
I'm 43% done with Grand Theft Auto V.
That's pretty far. That's a pretty fucking intense game.
Yeah, and I'm like, this is gonna end soon.
I'm not
happy about it.
It's still not gonna end soon. Do you guys ever? Have you ever thought about like, you know, making wooden phone cases or like trying to?
Yeah, we, you know, when the iPhone case was suddenly a huge product, we immediately looked at a few different ways to do it, but the. Our thing at Offerman Woodshop is everything is made by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And iPhone cases and iPad covers and all that kind of stuff are all made with computers, with robots, basically.
Mm-hmm.
something that's that thin and that precision to make by hand would be, I would have to charge $25,000.
Which is not, yeah. It's not a terrible upmark when you think about what you pay for a fucking plastic iPhone case.
No, it's true.
Yeah. It's like a nickel worth of plastic for
just don't make it as small. Just have it, the case be huge, and you just put the iPhone in the middle of it.
Just sink it into a 2x4.
Yeah. It's been pitched, trust me. But you know, generally we have to, when we're prototyping items, one of the guys is, we're possibly going to come online with a full-on Hobbit tobacco pipe.
Oh!
the curved stem. Gandalf's pipe.
Yeah, sure.
But we go through stringent, testing and, like, can we... The thing is, people will say, what about your cutting board makes it worth, why should I pay $125 for a goddamn cutting board? And the reason is because it's made by hand. It's very beautiful and of the highest quality. And the person who's making it is, you're paying someone $17 an hour to make something rather than paying three Chinese children, a quarter an hour in a really flawed system. That's sort of the answer to the question is America is right. The answer to any question. On our website is like, well, because we should all be making things for each other in this country and paying a little more for them, and then we can defeat other nations.
With cutting boards.
That's right.
We can defeat them with cutting boards.
Have you seen our cutting boards? Of course we won.
I can make some dope shit out of cutting boards.
You could, if the cutting board could disassemble in a certain way, that you could pull a weapon out of it, or you could... place things inside to hide. I mean, there's a lot of different things you could do with a cutting board.
You have to stop thinking in terms of inside the box weapons. The cutting board is your weapon.
Oh,
meat is the ultimate weapon.
I guess that's true.
To disarm any peoples, if you cook your meat well enough, they will lay down their arms.
Yeah. Right.
Mm. And then you punch them in the nuts. Yeah.
While they're laying
and
their arms down.
And steal their treasures.
That was in the Art of War. That was literally in the Art of War.
That was Lao Tse, right?
Yeah.
I think as they are leaning back, because they have to put their weapon back to expose their nuts, and then in for the nut punch.
You just be real cool.
Act like you didn't even do it.
Wapow! And you have to say that noise as
you're gonna let that meat rest, bro?
Or serve them undercooked meat.
I don't
now you're
really
thinking,
think there's such
but
a thing.
That's That in the nut punch version, then you have delicious cooked meat to enjoy after you've defeated them.
I guess that's
celebration
true.
Meat.
Do you feel like do you feel like that in some type of an apocalypse that you would be thoroughly prepared for such to go back to?
Definitely not as much as people would think, based on the sort of mythology of Ron Swanson. Like I definitely want to call up Pratt. Pratt is a hunter, and I'm not. I'm a fisherman. Like I can definitely, I can definitely create shelter and fire, and I'm pretty skilled in most scouting ways.
Well, you're already present in this room in the apocalypse. You've just mentioned three things that none of us can do.
I can tie knots.
I've heard of those things.
I can fish. I can tie knots.
But I definitely would want. You know, I'm an actor. I live in Los Angeles, and there are so many people when people say things to me like, how are you so manly? I say, I know many 13-year-old girls in rural areas of the country that are way more manly than me because they're required to be. They go out and milk the cows every morning. They drive the tractor. They split the firewood. I'm a sissy. I mean, I live in comfort.
Right now, a child is hunting a boar for food.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still feel like... that in our society, the fact that you can do something with your hands to make a thing puts you pretty close to the top of the food chain, certainly in our circles.
In our circle, perhaps, but that just says very sad things about our circle.
Yeah,
maybe, or that you could fucking own it. So maybe just don't compete with the Midwest and just fucking own the West Coast if shit goes down.
King of the dancers.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be...
The West Coast is pretty rustic. A lot of forest.
There
a lot
is
of manly, a lot of manly outside of the cities. It's pretty much just rural.
You don't have to go that far outside of the cities. You just have to go into the valley.
Yeah,
well,
past the valley,
past Studio City. Yeah. You get past Studio City.
There's nothing past Studio City.
Yeah, there is.
It's a barren wasteland. I know it.
And then there's Encino, and then there's Reseda and Van Nuys, and then the 118.
Ooh,
Ronald Reagan Freeway.
It's fun. I'm enjoying my job playing someone who's perceived as, you know, superhumanly macho, but my uncles and aunts will pound me into pulp if I don't always say, well, I'm an artist. yes, I can sharpen my axe and split firewood with it, but I choose instead to perform on stage and mince about for people's entertainment.
With an axe that you sharpened, could be part of it. You could have made some of the furniture on the stage.
I would love. Yeah, I mean, that's just it. Instead of like leading us to victory in the apocalypse, I would rather perform in a musical about chopping firewood.
Boy, he really kept our morale up during the apocalypse.
Chop, chop, chop.
Paul Bunyan, the musical is that's my bag.
That would be a.
I will play Babe the Blue Ox. All right.
We'd love to check out your tape.
Oh, yeah. I've sent it, actually, already to people.
He actually made a VHS tape.
Yeah, he blew himself. Arrested Development.
Megan always has a very funny saying in such instances that came up sincerely when we were doing a play together. And she had just recorded her first record, and it was a beautiful record with Tom Waits and Randy Newman songs and Bobby Gentry. And I said something. I think I was angling to try and get a copy of it. We had just started becoming friends. I was like, hey, if you have... and it's when you still had to have a CD. You could,
It
wasn't digital yet. This was 1961. And and I said, hey, if you have a copy of that, I'd love to check it out and give you some notes. And she said completely facetiously, yeah, it'd be fun to get your feedback. And so that became a saying in our house. when one of us wants the other one to weigh in on something that we have no business weighing in on, we say, yeah, it'd be fun to get your feedback.
Probably one of the reasons why you have a good marriage is because you both recognize, like, maybe I should shut up right now and not. I find that I constantly am getting into trouble by offering an opinion that was never solicited.
Never give an opinion or never try to solve anything.
Well, it's fine to solve things. I think that's fine, and I think that's inherently
to you.
I think that's inherently.
I gave her the perfect advice.
She didn't ask for it. I gave her the perfect advice. Hey, you dummy, do this. What's wrong? I'm trying to be sensitive. But I think
maybe it's that voice you're using when you're giving advice.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I feel like Don Rickles really speaks to her. But I feel like, you know, the ability to say, I'll just, you know, I will have faith and trust you that you are an intelligent human being who knows what you're doing, and I will not try to fix something that was not asked of me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to know your department, you know, when it comes to it, like in our house, we're both Luddites. We're both terrible at technology on purpose, and even now we're formulating a plan to get off of email.
Mm-hmm.
We've been formulating.
You have the same email address. You share an email address.
We do, and it's on Earthlink, like
just like my parents,
which makes people laugh. For what reason, I don't know.
Sorry.
But we just had Sam Elliott on our show recently.
Uh-huh.
And Sam, I had not met him. He's, of course, a great hero to me and to many. And it was incredible. He was so beautiful and such a hilarious, gentle, giving soul. And it was so amazing to have him, somebody, you know, like the living embodiment of John Wayne or...
Yeah.
And any manly hero to me is all wrapped up in Sam Elliott, and have him in Ron's office and like doing some scenes was incredible. And he and his wife, like, he doesn't have an email, and of course he's a few decades ahead of me in age, but there was just a sensibility of us saying, he still seems to be getting to work on time. Like, there, he is receiving information from the world without having an email address. We just, it's a gripe that we have because when we get home from work, and I'll work a 12-hour day generally at our show, then you get home and you're expected, you're obligated to spend 1 to 2 hours answering all these emails. And that's something that's insidiously crept into our lives that makes me really mad because in the 15 years ago, if you got home and your answering machine was blinking 85 new messages, which is kind of our average, 85 to 120 emails a day, you would throw it out the window and say, this is ridiculous. But somehow we're expected to keep up with all these things, so we're trying to ease ourselves back out of it.
Do you have quiet times where you just sit in a room and read or whittle or do something that's not watching TV or checking anything electronically?
We do. I mean, we do sort of announce like at night on school nights. You know, it's sort of an understood thing that we leave our devices out of the room. And spend our time together either reading or 69ing.
Yeah. While reading.
Which we had.
You still got the vision on the book. You can just put it above her head.
Yeah.
Vice versa.
And by devices, I mean, you know, smartphones and iPads and all that.
Yeah. Not vibrant.
Some devices are welcome.
Understood.
In the 69.
Yeah,
it's a lot of
in the nest.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Offerman Woodshop kazoo, for example.
Mustache comb probably.
Gotta remember to hum.
Handy.
Hum, don't blow.
The thing really creates a buzz.
I'm sorry that I became an audience member and laughed so hard. I really wish the comedy nerd in me wanted to riff off that. That's one of the funniest things ever happened on this podcast. I did not see it coming.
Why was I not surprised by it? I don't understand. I felt like
Megan,
I saw...
Megan Off also does not see it coming.
What? Why are we 69ing all of a sudden?
Yeah. Whoa, take it easy, honey. Yeah. Stick with me.
That's because it's a school night, honey. That's why we're 69. Yeah.
It's still 69.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we're the perfect victims because we're both workaholics, so we haven't learned to say no and protect ourselves from... All from just, you know, like your friend's cousin is like, hey, I made a short, can I send it to you? And you're like, yeah, I'm supportive, I want to. And eventually you get enough of those that you're like, oh, this
how many
is...
cousins do we have?
Yeah. Who's this guy?
I can't stop.
you. The hardest you've ever laughed out of all the people we've had on. We've had Mel Brooks on. He's laughed the hardest at a 69.
Listen, a good joke's a good
joke. It's a great joke.
You hit a vein.
I would love to mention that to Mel.
You hit a vein. And when you're 69ing later, you're going to be like, this totally broke up Hardwick earlier.
I wish Hardwick was here right now. This would fucking kill.
I love this.
I mean, if I just said it and it was funny.
Yeah. You're tearing up. You're tearing up.
I'm fucking crying.
I've never seen you laugh that hard. That's something that wasn't just like mean that happened to somebody else.
It's true. You know, I could sit here and dissect the 10 reasons why that was so fucking funny, but I don't want to ruin it by overanalyzing it. It was just
let it
ride.
It
was a really nice moment. Yeah. Oh, god damn it.
Speaking of Adam Scott.
Yes.
Did you know, we were talking recently about my book, Paddle Your Own Canoe, coming out October 1st from Dutton Books, an imprint of Penguin Random House.
Yes.
Which I think you said.
The one
that we were talking about earlier, that book.
Yeah, that book earlier.
I'm sorry, one more time, what was the name of it?
One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Paddle Your Own Canoe.
And what was it on again?
Oh,
Dutton.
Dutton,
which is like
it's an imprint of Penguin Random House.
That's right.
Smooth. Adam and I were talking about it because he was generous enough to take a look at some of it, and there's some stories in it about how horribly shitty casting in the business can be
the worst experience.
You know, when people say my young person wants to get into acting, what's your advice? I say, fucking punch them in the balls and steal their meat. That's right. Yeah. But I say it's the worst. Don't tell them don't do it. It's like to choose the masochism of going to auditions is really stupid. But sometimes you can't help it. You have to do it anyway. And so here we are. So Adam and I were kind of reminiscing. I've known him. Megan and I met him probably 13 or 14 years ago in the theater world. Adam's sort of been around since his late teens, I think, in LA. And I was, so we were just comparing horror stories, talking about dicks. When you get into the pattern where you're like testing for TV shows every year, there's always usually a few friends. Like that's where I actually met and became friends with Rainn Wilson, was auditioning for TV shows.
And you really get excited when you see them, like, oh, it's nice. Yeah. Oh, I feel comfortable now because I really like this guy.
There's that, and you also, like if I saw Rainn, I knew, oh, this is probably a good show.
Right.
Because Rainn doesn't suffer foolish material gladly. But then there's also hilarious bad guys. And for a while, there was this one guy who was like a B-movie action kind of star guy. And for some reason, he had worked into the audition pool for like straight-talking, serious NYPD blue kind of procedural fireman cop shows. And usually, you don't get meatheads at those auditions. You get bookish, like football players.
Yeah.
But you get people who, you have to be pretty well spoken because you get these paragraphs of like forensic information, and so you usually don't get meatheads. But this one meathead had made his way through the filters. I don't remember his name, but he would always have like greased arms.
Yeah.
And you'd walk into a waiting room, and it was as though you were there to literally fist fight him. So he'd just fucking stare daggers at you.
Jesus.
And you'd be, you know, and you're an actor, so you're like, hey guys, Jeff, hey everybody, so good luck. Cop stuff, right? And then this guy would get up and go out. There's this one waiting room at the NBC lot. You could see out into the parking lot through the window. And he would go out to where all the guys could see him.
I know what he's doing.
And do, like, karate katas. Jesus. As though he was having some private time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just
very
like,
publicly.
Like, crush air. And then every once in a while, glance in at you. And then you have to pretend like you weren't watching him.
Yeah.
So we were talking about situations like that. And he amazingly revealed that he had tested for the lead on 6 Feet Under. For Michael C. Hall's part.
Oh, wow.
Which was so... I've never like gone up for a part that I didn't get that then went on to become something as insanely amazing as that. But I thought that spoke a lot towards Adam's sort of superpowers to be an incredibly charismatic leading man. That there's probably three more of those that he's not telling me about.
Adam Scott could have been Dexter then.
He could have.
Wow. By rights, he could have been. Yeah. That could have been his path.
He, I'm a very big fan of his. He's really, really good and underplayed at what he does. But he's also just so goddamn funny.
Yeah. He is. And one of the things that I was talking to him about was that as a really funny guy, as a performer, you usually sense, you know, and I know I'm sure I have this too, I'm saying I have the bad part of it, which is like you can usually sense in a comic or an actor, like you just feel like you can feel the molecules of desperation a little bit. You can feel a little bit of like, I hope, please like me, or, you know, I need attention or whatever.
Sure.
And Adam, you just don't, he just, like, he seems fine with like, yeah, if you notice him or you don't, he doesn't give a shit. Like it's a very good lesson to learn. Like, oh yeah, you could just be comfortable and you don't have to be, you know.
Well, he was like a journeyman. He's been acting professionally for like
a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like at the point where people started noticing him, I don't think he had that need to.
Doesn't like, always fix everyone. Just because you've been doing it for a long time, there are still some people where you just feel like they walk into a room and you're like, they need something.
Sure.
And I don't know what it is or if I can give it to them, and it's awkward.
Well, apropos of what you're saying, Adam was pretty crazy about my book, Paddle Your Own Canoe.
When is this available?
One Man's Guide to...
Oh, it's coming out October 1st.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Delicious Living.
If I was searching by publisher, how would I find it?
I think it's coming from Dutton Books.
Oh, that's Penguin, Random House.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's an imprint of Penguin Random House.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Adam has a lot of complimentary things to say about it.
Are you doing signings? Like, you running around doing that?
We're in the middle of shooting Parks.
Oh, yeah.
But I am doing... It'd
be funny if you set one up at Parks for the cast.
I am actually doing that. I'm doing... Well, it's not official, I wanted to give the book to... You know, it's a very loving family over there. So I wanted... to give the book to, of course, the cast, the producers and the writer, I got to give it to the props people, and so eventually I was like, oh, I'm going to give the book to the show,
but then
I thought, that's one weird thing, it's my first book, and it feels really strangely narcissistic, because when I make a film, then I don't go around handing it to people
and signing it.
Here's my film. You're welcome. Yes. Please enjoy. About 27 minutes of it. I'm in some pretty.
Thanks for the props. Some pretty good laughs for you.
Yeah. Yeah. The best is happening between 16 and 19. Watch that. Enjoy it.
So it's weird to give someone your book. So then I decided what I'm going to do is make the book available at my show. It's going to be announced that if you go to like the closet on the third floor. There will be a quantity of my book that you can get, and I'm going to sign them all.
Yeah.
Then, if people want to, I can like sign it around the job or something. But it's a weird.
I was kind of hoping you would set up next to Craft Services with the stack of the books.
Yeah. I may. And Jim O'Hare is probably going to have to pay for a signed copy. Don't tell everybody else, but
you're going to have to sneak it in. They're going to order a burger, and it's just going to be between two buns. And they're like, oh, what is this book?
Enjoy the sandwich. Flee.
Are you gonna? Is there any part of you that will you feel weird? Will you be checking the closet to see how many copies are gone?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a nice thing about being an acquired taste. Like, I'm not in the business of trying to. I often say this about Parks and Rec, but like, I'm not in the McDonald's business. I'm not trying to sell quarter pounders. I'm much more trying to make a kick-ass Reuben sandwich. And most people, A, aren't going to stick around and wait for the sandwich, and B, it's a much more acquired taste. Is it incredibly more delicious? Sure. But you're going to serve it to a lot fewer people, and so...
But those people will really appreciate it.
Hopefully, yeah.
And not just mindlessly shove it into their...
Exactly. I think it comes from my beginnings in small Chicago theater. You learn that it's not the amount of people you're performing for, it's the quality of experience that the audience that has shown up receives from you. I'm confident that, you know, some people that work at my show will like my book. And, you know, if they don't, they'll be like, oh, wow, okay, I was wrong about that. I'll just go make some more shit out of wood.
Technically, the book is made out of wood.
It is.
It is. Yeah. It's very soft wood.
Indeed.
How was the... I was in Boston 2-3 weeks ago, and I saw that you were at the Wilbur with Megan. What did you guys do?
Oh, we're there in a couple days.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's a great theater. What did you guys
Friday,
do?
We're
it's
there.
The greatest. We did a whole Northeastern tour, actually. We played Newport. We played Boston, three shows in Boston.
Yeah.
We do a show. I do this show called American Ham. That's I'm like a humorist, a foul mouthed, less educated Garrison Keillor.
Of course.
I do some songs and tell some stories. It's my 10 tips for prosperity. It actually inspired the book.
Yeah.
I tried to turn in the show to become the book, and the show written out is like 12 pages long.
You've done that at Largo, right?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Megan has this incredible band, Nancy and Beth, and they're kind of new, and they're drumming up an audience. And so we've begun combining sticking my chocolate into her peanut butter, as it were. And so her band, Nancy and Beth, opened for me. And then sometimes they get a headline show, and then I open for them, or we then we always end up doing songs together. They are one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen. She and our friend Stephanie Hunt, who was on Friday Night Lights, these two beautiful, gorgeously voiced women are doing like if the Andrews sisters ate peyote and then like shot some videos. They sing in close harmony like that. So it's very toe-tamping, and but it's entertaining in an old-fashioned way that just nobody does anymore. They dance and they sing, and their band is amazing. So we did that at the Wilbur and all over the Northeast. The Wilbur is the best.
It's such a great space.
Yeah, I love that theater.
Because it's big enough to be a theater and gorgeous inside, but it still feels intimate somehow.
Yeah.
But it holds like 1,100 people.
Yeah, it's...
Is that how many?
Yeah. But the 1,100, it's such a fucking great space. It's such a great space.
I like to get a quantity of legal seafood chowder.
Yes.
And I recommend this both for the delicious flavor and the name of the item, the hot lump crab dip.
He's right.
Where is that?
Legal.
It's legal.
Yeah.
You can't beat it.
Yeah.
Are we going to go there this weekend?
No, we are going to go to the James Hook, which is the best lobster roll in the country.
All right. I'll have to make a return trip.
Yeah, yeah. It's close to Faneuil Hall, like if you kept walking towards the water and the bridges there, and it's like one of the things that's like right on the pier, James like water.
So when people come see your shows, do they come expecting Ron and...
What's funny, I start the show by saying, hello, thank you. I start the show with my shirt off because I advertise minor nudity to get the asses in the seats. I know what I'm doing. I'm a showman.
Are you worried pedophiles will show up?
Fill it up.
That's the Chicago spirit right there.
But that's a funny joke that I like.
Thank you.
See, that's how...
You know there's laughter. You can use laughter to tell that too.
That's how Nick reacts to a joke he likes. Chris just goes out of commission for 4 minutes.
I really did.
That's a funny... I like that funny humor.
Thank you.
There's a sound. It'll come up.
So I come out with my shirt off. Then I had this shirt made by a couple of the ladies at Parks and Rec. It's basically, if I said to you, picture what Clint Eastwood's, what like Bronco Billy's rodeo shirt would be if it was an American flag in 1972. It's beat up cotton. And you would think you could find it online. You can't. All the American flag rodeo shirts suck. So I had this one made, so I put that on, and then I say to the audience, good evening, thank you so much for coming out. And they're always insanely enthusiastic, so much so that sometimes I call Mike Schur or Amy Poehler or like Aubrey or Pratt so they can share.
But never Aziz.
Never Aziz. He gets his plenty. He's on the road himself.
He's busy with Jay-Z.
And also never Jim O'Hare, of course. But the adulation, I say, thank you so much. This is so generous. You must really love that TV show because you've come here tonight to see me do you have no fucking idea what. Literally, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And sometimes I'll start doing Christmas carols on my guitar where I'm like, we're gonna spend some time in the glory of the Lord. If you'll join me in song. And you know, eventually I break into the... To the show, to the good stuff, but that's the amazing thing is like people have no idea because I have no precedent. I don't perform as myself. I'm a theater actor, so it's a new thing for me to be a humorist.
Which is why I walked by and I was like, oh, that's interesting. What is he doing there? I'm looking forward to.
It's fun. Yeah, it's it's been something that I haven't had quite enough time to do.
Yeah.
And so it's been a lot of fun, but I look forward to doing it again when other things slow down.
Would you be happy just doing that, if just you and Megan touring and then...
We definitely, yeah. She started touring with Nancy and Beth, and suddenly we were spending 3 and 4 day weekends apart on single individual tours, and we said, we need to combine our powers. So we want to do a tour that's like basically... A profane modern day Donnie and Marie Stephen Eady kind of thing,
where Stephen Eady,
where it's just the two of us, and maybe with some musicians or whatnot. But I think that would be really dreamy. The nice thing is, which is a great luxury, is that it's not all we can do. So it's something, maybe for a summer we'll do a 3 or 4 month tour and then go back to film work or theater work or what have you.
That's great.
But it seems like a really fun way to spend a few months in an RV.
Any of those shows coming up anytime soon, or you're done for a while?
I have a handful coming up. I'm playing the University of Maryland in Baltimore the same weekend as Tig's Benson Ball.
Oh, nice.
In D.C., so hopefully somebody will come to my show. In St. Louis, I'm doing Washington University. I'm playing the Chicago Theater next Thursday as part of my book tour.
That's a nice one.
Week. It is. It's enormous.
That's a big theater.
And daunting, yeah. But I do have some special. I go to the Berghoff restaurant and I get a bratwurst. I create a gaseous sort of. I cast a spell over the downtown loop area, and so I'm pretty confident that I will draw people in, like the Pied Piper of the olfactory.
Like you're just like a natural witch stool.
What is that?
So that's is there a nickofferman.com? Is that where people can get information?
No.
The man doesn't want to have an email address.
But that doesn't
anymore.
Mean Why that would someone wouldn't build him a website to advertise his stuff.
There's stuff. If you go to offermanwoodshop.com on the homepage, I believe there's like a calendar with what I'm up to.
Great. And then the book. Boy, I feel like it's called Paddle Your Own Canoe.
Some kids are saying PYOC.
Yeah, PYOC.
Yeah.
But Paddle Your Own Canoe, One Man's Fundamentals for Delicious Living.
I like going to a BYOC party where you have to bring your own. They don't supply the canoes. You have to bring your own canoe to the party.
Yeah.
It's just a fun time down a river.
That's a dope party.
Dutton, an imprint.
An imprint of Penguin Random House.
Random House.
Which is new. It used to.
It used to be just be Random House.
When I signed my deal, it was just Penguin. But, Random House, I believe, was like, what's up with this Nick Offerman book? Can we become partners with you, Penguin?
Can we get a piece?
That's how I see
so
that.
So your book drew in Random House to create the mega publisher.
I imagine. I mean, it had the timing it probably was such.
You weren't on every meeting, but it does sort of make sense.
Here's what I'm guessing.
They made a deal with
someone in an office said, I don't care what it takes, just get me Offerman.
Yep.
Well, we've merged with Penguin. I hope you're happy.
Penguin and Random House sat by a fire and 69'd each other.
That's right.
And that's how it happened.
School nights.
With devices.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Nick, amazing.
True.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.